All right. Hey. Good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. What is today? April the 23rd, 2025, Wednesday. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. It smells like fire. I think there's a big fire in New Jersey, a forest fire. I saw something on something somewhere saying that there was some fire and there was an evacuation, and I didn't know if I was to believe it or not because I tend not to believe anything anymore. But, man, it smells like fire. So I'm assuming there must really be a fire up in New Jersey. So thoughts and prayers to all those folks. Hope that is not a thing. But, man, the smoke is down here. But besides that, everything is terrific. I am off today and spending my day doing a few things that I was hoping to get accomplished. One of them was to go over and start to address my father's house. And it is it's tough. It's tough. But honestly, the longer that we sort of stay in this kind of position, you know, it just sort of drags out the pain of it. And I don't mean pain in the ass. I mean, like, emotional. It's really emotional. I don't think you ever are prepared. Unfortunately, there is no routine demise, right? It never goes. Some people just die. Some people mentally die, physically live. Some people physically die, mentally continue. That's more like my father. My father physically has sort of taken a terrible turn for the worse. But mentally, he's doing okay. Another friend of mine, her father is, her father is mentally dying. He has Alzheimer's. And physically doing okay. So you never know what it's going to be. But I guarantee one thing, it will be something. And the way it's gone for us is, you know, my mom passed and we just sort of, I won't say sat on her hands, but I don't think my dad was up to the idea of clearing out all of my mom's stuff due to the fact he was sort of living there by himself. I get it. I wouldn't want to address that either. And then my father going from really doing pretty good to all of a sudden not. And he will not be coming home. So we have a big-ass house to try to figure out what to do with all this stuff. And my brother has been doing a lot of stuff I've shared, I think, in the podcast. We've been, you know, donating a lot of clothes. And, of course, we donate a lot of clothes. And then someone's like, you shouldn't donate it. That's all good stuff to sell. And then I'm like, do we want to sell it? Right? Do I feel like going through that? Or if we can just donate it to somebody that needs it, maybe that's actually better. My dad's like, that thing might be worth some money. This thing might be worth some money. But do I feel like, you know, starting an eBay store and selling all my father's stuff? Not really. But it doesn't also mean that I need to, you know, not do anything about it. There's a lot of stuff that we can address before we get to any of the stuff that really has value. And so that's what a goal of mine was, you know, I try to go by my dad's house every morning and make sure everything's good and, make sure everything's situated correctly. But I usually don't have a lot of time to do much because I'm usually on my way to work. But today I'm off, so I wanted to go over there and just sort of sit down. He has a right drawer. My dad, it's interesting. My parents have always been, my dad's always had his office, right? Where's dad? He's in his office, right? You go down to the office. I'd make that long walk down to the old office. And whether it was a good walk or a bad walk, but it was all everything took place in the office. And my dad's always been, you know, into computers and whatever technology. I remember him spending $10,000 on a computer when we lived in San Diego. And I was like, holy shit. And it may have been about $8,000 or $9,000, but I was like, holy shit, $9,000? He's like, top of the line. I was like, okay. And, you know, you couldn't give that computer away today. That's how far we've obviously come. And but he's just always liked to have, you know, that kind of stuff. And so his office, right? And this was California, he had his office. In Albuquerque, he had his office. And here in Delaware, he has his office. And so the office is the heartbeat of the house. And my dad, of course, had routers and, you know, landlines. And when he built this house, he had the whole house hardwired for landlines and speakers, and it's just, you know, the technology really hit a breaking point at over there. And so, you know, to make a long story short, my job today is to try to, and my dad says, you know, everything that's important is in the right-hand drawer. And I was like, well, you know, it was. There's nothing important in there anymore. Everything that's important I have in a filing folder for my dad, or the VA has it. And so the rest is not important. And so that's what I was doing this morning. I'm just slowly going through all of his stuff and filling trash cans of, you know, stuff he doesn't want anymore. And, you know, it sucks. I mean, I'm grateful, honestly, that we've had my mom and dad for as long as we did. I know one thing, we all go through this. You know, I shared, I have nothing, I have no regrets. He was telling me today, he goes, there's a safe out in the garage. And I'm like, a safe? I didn't know you had a safe. And so I'm looking out there, and it's actually one of those big filing cabinets that's, you know, that can't burn, that you can lock. And I was talking to him on the phone, and I finally found it. He goes, that's where all of the paperwork from, you know, back in the day, you know, when you were doing bad things. Killers, My Own Soul's Warning. But yeah, he's like, that's the filing cabinet that has all the documentation from when you were being a bad guy. And I was like, oh, great. You know, it just is a trip down memory lane that not necessarily I feel like going down. Every box is a turn. Every folder I open is a memory. And there's a lot, you know, it's funny, when I grew up, we didn't have sort of like we are today. I mean, I don't know how many freaking pictures I have on my phone, but I would imagine thousands. And when I was a kid, I remember getting a camera. I think it was a Kodak, and it was that flat one, right? And then you put the little cube, a little flash on top, and it sort of spun. And I remember I had an early fascination with cameras, and I would take pictures. I loved taking pictures, but it would, you know, you'd have to get them developed. And it cost money, and it was a whole production, and you never really knew exactly what you got. And you never knew, you know, and that was sort of the fun part about it, I suppose. It didn't seem it at the time, but looking back, it is one of the cool things. But you never knew, you know, what you were doing. So if you weren't doing something right, you never knew that you needed to make an adjustment so you could have a whole roll of shitty pictures. But, you know, found boxes and boxes of pictures, and a lot of pictures from when I was a teenager and growing up that I hadn't seen in a long time. You know, my kids have pictures of them. I mean, I got thousands of pictures of my kids. There wasn't a lot of pictures of us growing up. And so each one has a real special moment. And then tons of pictures of my parents. My parents were big golfers, so they went to a lot of resorts to golf, especially in New Mexico and Colorado and California and Nevada. And so just a lot of pictures and history. And, you know, and then I'm like, do I want to, I can't keep all of it. Right? There are some things I have got to let go. And then I start thinking about, you know, how eventually we will all be forgotten. Right. And, it's just a trip. It's a trip. But, you know, him mentioning the fact that all of the bad shit we did is in that filing cabinet. And there was a moment where I thought, oh, I should save it. But I'm not. There's nothing to save. There's nothing in my past I need to save. I've cleaned up my past. And I'm ready to let it go. And I will not be revisiting. I pray to God. I don't really know what exactly could be in there, because it's not like I did a lot of bad things. But you know, back in those days, everything got a file. If your parents were like that, I had a file. My brother and I each had our own file. And he's like, there's files and here's files and these are important files. I'm like, Jesus. I go, there is nothing important anymore, Dad. I have everything that you need that's important. Besides that, it's all not important. And it's just crazy. And so it's kind of a bummer, but, you know, I'm grateful. Like, once again, we're available to do it. You know, I just was reading on my phone a news article about a kid. Well, I saw on the news that somebody up in a town above us in Georgetown got hit by a car last night. And now it came up on my Facebook that he was a guy in recovery. I don't know if he was sober or if he was struggling, but he was definitely part of the recovery community. And initial reports that I'd read said he just walked out into the street. And but in the article I read on my Facebook or whatever it was on, they said that he was wearing dark clothing and wasn't seen. But it sounded like he walked out into the street, which I can absolutely relate to. You know, it is a sad existence, especially when we feel hopeless. And I have felt that. But my dad and mom made great efforts to prevent me from feeling that. And, you know, I've said before, as an adopted kid, I don't know. I hope I never have to find out when we stop helping our children. But I can tell you, my parents, whether if my dad didn't want to, my mom did, or if my mom didn't want to, my dad did. But between the two of them, the four of us, they somehow provided us help long enough where we could finally get to a point where we could, you know, shape up. You know, my brother was at such a state. He, you know, my dad had to give up on my brother, but that was unfortunately the solution. And honestly, I don't know if that solution may have helped us early on. Maybe we wouldn't have gone through all the things that we went through. But it is what it is, right? And finally, my dad had to tell my brother, that's it, no more. You're done. And then, of course, my brother, you know, found a way to get better and, you know, and continue. I talked to him this morning. He's at his job. He hates his job. He sets up construction zones on the highway. If you're ever in one of those construction zones with a flagger and you hate that guy, you know, my brother is one of those guys that get that set up. And, you know, he gets it set up and then he fills in for the guys for breaks. And it's just, they are treated terrible and it's really bad. And a friend of his was killed last year, flagging, and, you know, so I always try to wave and have respect for those guys, but, you know, due to the fact my dad said, that's it, you know, my brother finally was able to, you know, and I talked about it, I just got done with my walk, and I listened to that podcast I did the other day, and, you know, that is when my brother started to become accountable, right, and started to fix his, or at least be aware of it, and because addicts like me and my brother, we will take advantage for as long as we can, and then when finally the gig is up, right? Then we become willing. Fortunately and unfortunately for my brother, my dad, there was no more, I'm sorry, let's try again. My brother had to literally figure it out. And he did. And I'm grateful for that, because I told my brother, man, I said, you know, you're the only guy I got left in our family. And I like him a lot better when he's sober. As assume he likes me much better as a sober person. But, you know, it's just, I'm just so grateful for them. And as a parent, you know, we try to do the same. My wife's like, tell Sam to get up. You know, it's spring break this week, so my kid's sleeping. She's like, do not let him sleep late. Get him up. He needs to clean up the kitchen. And I'm like, you know, part of me is like, well, I feel like he comes here for week on, week off. The week he's here, I feel like he's loaded up with tasks where I don't feel like as many tasks are given to the other children during the rest of the week. And I start feeling bad, and I want to defend him. And then I have to remind myself, this is what creates character, right? People say, well, so-and-so didn't have to do that, and so-and-so didn't have to do that. Yeah, but I don't care about them. I care about you, and I want you to be able to handle things. And so, you know, I have to get out of his way. I have to get out of the way and let the magic happen. And my parents did that for me, but, you know, I don't know. They probably could have thrown me to the curb a little earlier in life and maybe would have helped, but, you know, the path is the path. And what's most important now is that, you know, I am here, and I am here for my dad, and I was there for my mom, and I'm grateful for that. And this, I know he is especially grateful for that. But it's just tough. It's just what I've been dealing with this morning. Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. It's weird how important life is, and then in the end, it just really isn't. But yeah, you know, I was listening to that podcast, and I don't always listen to them, but sometimes I'll go back. I did a podcast a few weeks back, and, you know, I felt like I was a little, I don't know, moody. So I just want to make sure, I just try to listen to make sure I sound like a sane person. But, you know, when I listened to that podcast, and I think I played that song, Wasted Time. And then that song talks about you and I, you and I. And it's funny how, as a person growing up, I remember that song as a kid, You and I. And it was always about, you know, you, a person, usually probably a girl, right? You and I. But as a person today, that someone that's sober and has become aware of the self-centered life and that I've left behind, hopefully, all these songs really remind me of the struggle I've had through my life, of this battle between self, you know, self and humility, good and bad, God and the devil. And that's how my life has always been. It's been me, myself, and I, right? And no consideration of others, and completely unaware. And then, of course, beginning sober and learning all about it, and then be like, oh my God, I can't believe, right? I was unaware of this. I'm so almost embarrassed. And that's why I do believe that it's somehow a spiritual hijacking. That's the only excuse I have. But, you know, today, all of the things that I have thought were important, you know, the easy things in life, the free money, the you know, getting off early, whatever it is that serves self, that self was just so ecstatic about, it turns out, are some of the most worst parts of my life. And the real tough times, right? Going to jail, right? I'll never forget going to jail and being sentenced to work release and, you know, absolutely possessed by a fucking drug devil that was unrelenting, not letting go at all. There was no, I mean, this devil, everything I should have done to hopefully prevent myself from going to jail, I chose not to, and I just listened to the devil. You know, I've shared in the past, you know, well, I've been busted. I probably should quit. Didn't quit, right? Well, I've been busted for selling dope. Probably shouldn't sell dope. Didn't stop. I got to go to court. I got to, you know, look at my best behavior. I should probably go sober. Went high. you know, all the absolute basic simple things, the choices that I should have and could have made, I chose not to. And, you know, finally, right, being sentenced and then having to turn myself in, you are sentenced to work release. And the devil inside me is like, sweet, because we're going to get high. We're going to leave. Well, in my drug-fueled mind, I thought I will go to work release. In the mornings, I'll just leave, and I'll use meth and drink, and then I'll just come back in, and nobody will notice. Nobody would notice. It's not the way it works, bro. And I remember walking into that place, and I remember, you know, I had the date. You know, you're going in on this date. And I was like, well, I got to get clean by then, right? I got to stop using drugs and alcohol before I go to jail. No, I went in. I think I smoked meth in the parking lot. Just absolutely out of my freaking, possessed by a freaking devil. And when I found out, because I went in there with a smile, I'm like, I got a plan. And me and the devil are going to continue doing what we do. And I remember walking in, they said, oh, by the way, you are being sent to a level 3 probation camp in Big Bear Mountains. You will not be staying here. And I lost it. I lost my shit. I'm calling my lawyer, screaming, what the fuck? Just out of my mind. And he's like, there's nothing I can do, bro. Bye. And he hung up. And, you know, that to me was the bottom worst part of my absolute life. And it was probably one of the most important things that ever happened to me. I did not stay sober from that moment. But it would be a real, you know, I can step back and look at it and go, God, man, what a mess. And, you know, today I just look at life in such a different way. You know, the hard things are what's most important to me today. And the easy things I'll take, but they don't do much for me. Today I'm off. I'm trying to make myself put a little more emphasis on doing things that are important that I need to get taken care of on my days off, because if I don't, this will be an absolute waste of day, and you know, I have a little shame about it. But in my mind, you know, it's a day off. I'm supposed to rest and relax. Well, listen, I'm living a pretty relaxed life, and so but yeah, that's sort of what's going on. I wasn't even sure I was going to try to do the podcast today. I'm you know, I was supposed to get, I had important things to do. I did go, like I said, I went and took care of my dad's stuff, threw a bunch of stuff away. I actually talked to him on the phone while I was doing it. And, you know, he keeps telling me, you know, that's important. And I'm like, it isn't. It isn't important anymore. He's like, you're right. You know, it's a lot of his yearbooks from the Air Force Academy. And I'm like, what do I do with this, right? He's like, well, that's for history. And I go, Dad, you know, I can't keep everything. And so he's like, get rid of it. But I took care of that, came home, did my walk. And then Sam and I are going to go up and see my dad here in just a little bit. And then my other son just called me. So, you know, all of these wonderful things that are in my life today are here for one reason and one reason only. And that was because my dad stuck by me. And I'm so freaking grateful for that. And I just love it because I get to stick by my dad. And that is such a gift. And it's all because I'm sober. So, all right, well, let's read the Daily Reflections. And then I'm actually going to go see my dad and take Sam with me. And we're going to go up and see him, see how he's doing. Let's see. So I guess this podcast really isn't about anything. It's really just about, you know, another day of packing up my dad's life and our memories. All right. April 23rd, AA is not a cure-all. Okay. It would be a product of false pride to claim that AA is a cure-all, even for alcoholism, as Bill sees it, page 285. In my early years of sobriety, I was full of pride, thinking that AA was the only source of treatment for a good and happy life. It certainly was the basic ingredient for my sobriety and even today. With over 12 years in the program, I am very involved in meetings, sponsorship, and service. During the first 4 years of my recovery, I found it necessary to seek professional help, since my emotional health was extremely poor. There are those folks, too, who have found sobriety and happiness in other organizations. AA taught me that I had a choice to go to any lengths to enhance my sobriety. AA may not be a cure-all for everything, but it is the center of my sober living. Yeah. Yeah, it is funny because, and I was talking to one of the guys the other day about this. I go, you know, AA does not fix our drinking, right? There is nothing in the literature that stops us drinking. AA is to help us not drink again, right? You know, I've said this, I don't know if people agree with this, but I believe drinking alcohol, using drugs are character defects of mine. My real issue is that decision, the decision to do it. And, you know, like I shared earlier on in this podcast, is that, you know, I spent a lot of my life doing a lot of things that I knew were wrong, but did not care. And what AA does and the steps, especially the third step, right? You know, and that was sort of what that podcast was about the other day, is sort of these first three steps. But, you know, that's a lot of this is, you know, learning how to do things and care. Right? Today, if I am doing something and it is good, you know, I'm happy. But if it is the wrong thing to do, I don't like that and I don't want to do it. And but that was a missing part that I didn't have in my life early on. But I wasn't aware that I needed to be aware of it, to be honest with you. I didn't really know shit. But today I don't want to drink again. And I have gone down the path and drank again, and oblivious to a lot of stuff that I thought I was aware of. And, you know, so today it's about not picking up a drink. It's about that moment where that decision can be made, and me knowing what I know now, knowing that ain't going to work out. So let's avoid that. And, you know, I personally have not found the need to reach out to anything else but this program. I personally believe that everything I need to not pick up another drink is in this, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. What the big problem I think that people have is, and it even said in there, is there is more to sobriety. There is serenity. And the only way we can find serenity is the tough, hard, being accountable, being really honest kind of work that a lot of people, unfortunately, choose not to do. And so, you know, you can go to a meeting and you cannot pick up a drink and be the most miserable person in the world. Or you can, you know, be honest, become accountable, find the humility, figure out the part we played, choose not to do it. You know, I think a lot of the trouble, the future trouble, probably lies in the sixth and seventh step, you know, recognizing the character defects. Character defects bring down a lot of freaking people. And shortcomings, I think, bring down even more, right? The character defects are the ones that we do publicly. Like I said in that meeting, you know, 1 hour a day is good. We are on our best behavior. All of our character defects are put away. But for the other 23, you know, hopefully most of our character defects are put away, but it's those shortcomings. You know, the shit we do in private. Those are the hardest because no one sees it. It's just all of a sudden pops up one day and you're fucking in jail. And you're like, what the fuck happened? So, you know, for me, you know, just I've everything I need is right here in this program. Believe me, I know a lot of people that do every other thing they can to avoid doing the real hard work that is involved in this program. And to me, that's all spiritual. Those are still devils. That's still self. That's still pride. That's still ego. You know, when you're reading other shit because, I don't know, you don't want to read the truth, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I hope everyone has a great day. I will catch you later. Bye-bye.